The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Of urgent public importance, and the subject of the issue has been described by the leader of the Progressive Conservative Caucus as the prospect of multiple power rate increases. Does the host agree to give leave for the motion to be debated? Is it agreed?
Agreed.
Being agreed, leave have been given. The debate will take place today at the moment of interruption as provided under Rule 4311. It replaces the late debate. We will now go to orders of the day and oral questions put by members to ministers. The time now is 3:38, and we will end at 5:08. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the NDP government has sat quietly by while power rates have soared. People are struggling, businesses are closing, and the NDP government has passed the buck to the Utility and Review Board. Government's lack of action is forcing Nova Scotians to decide between keeping the heat on, Mr. Speaker, or buying food for the families. And the government is clearly out of touch with the priorities of Nova Scotians. My question to the Premier, why is the government content to hide behind the Utility and Review Board while power rates soar and Nova Scotians suffer?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the reason why power rates are going up is because the fuel that is used to create power in this province is fossil fuels, and that has increased by some 75% over the last 7 years. Mr. Speaker, more than a 10% a year increase, and the reason for that is because past governments did not make it a priority to get off of fossil fuels. This government is.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Speaker, the Premier is fond of saying his government took the provincial portion of the HST off power bills, Mr. Speaker. However, he's not fond about discussing the new NDP electricity tax, a tax, Mr. Speaker, he opposed while in opposition. This government's demand-side mansion fees are costing Nova Scotians more than $40 million a year, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government is directly responsible for increased power costs at $40 million. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier, why did the NDP government not tell Nova Scotians while they were going to give with one hand, they were going to take $40 million out of their pockets with the other hand?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, what he's talking about is the demand-side management charge, which is returned to consumers through programming, Mr. Speaker. What is the truth, though, is this, is that the Liberal Party of Nova Scotia campaigned against taking the HST off of home electricity. They put it on in the first place. They voted against taking it off. And if they were in power today, power prices would be 15% higher, or no, 10% higher.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier campaigned against the demand-side management tax, Mr. Speaker, which you quickly put on, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, on June 9th, a letter to the Utility Review Board, written by the NDP government, Mr. Speaker, about this electricity tax, and I quote, places the burden of the DSM-related improvements too heavily on the residential users and other rate classes, end of quote, Mr. Speaker. Can you further down to a letter from the Premier, Mr. Speaker, I quote, this surcharge on their power bills at this juncture would add unneeded and counterproductive costs to residential business users, end of quote, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind this House and all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, since he's become Premier, power rates have gone up over 20%, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this is a tax, Mr. Speaker, this is a tax on the poor and middle-class income families and small business owners, Mr. Speaker, when shareholders could have paid the bill. So my question to the Premier, why does the Premier believe that Nova Scotia shareholders should pay the NDP electricity tax and not Nova Scotia Power shareholders?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as the Leader of the Opposition creates this fantastical imagery around the Utility and Review Board, Mr. Speaker, he knows full well that the conservation measures are the most important way that people can actually reduce their costs, Mr. Speaker. They can go back, they get that money back, Mr. Speaker, in conservation programs. But what is also true, of course, is that if they had their way, the price of electricity in this province would be 10% higher than it is today.
The leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Premier. This week, the Public Utilities Board of Newfoundland reported that they could not conclude that the Lower Churchill Hydro Project was the best option for Newfoundland and Labrador. In fact, they said they could not determine whether it was the most affordable power source for Newfoundlanders at all. In Nova Scotia, our Premier refuses to do a review of the same project because he has already made up his mind. And so my question to the Premier is this: how much does he know? How much will Nova Scotians pay in cents per kilowatt hour for power from the Lower Churchill project? How much is it?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, there have been numerous studies that have come out that have shown that this, in fact, is the lowest cost option for power. It is only the Conservatives who could choose to gamble on future power rates instead of getting 35 years of power at a fixed rate.
Honourable the Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, gambling is when you commit your province to something and you don't even know how much it is going to cost. A simple question: how much will it cost Nova Scotians? No answer from the Premier. Mr. Speaker, I'll tell you what, the best information available from Newfoundland says that power from Lower Churchill will cost 16.4 cents per kilowatt hour, and I will table the document that makes that so. That is how much it's going to cost Newfoundlanders. That is at least 20% more than Nova Scotians are paying for power now, and that is before we transmit that power by expensive subsea cable from Newfoundland to Nova Scotia. So my question to the Premier, Mr. Speaker, is this: will he finally stand up for Nova Scotia ratepayers and review the project to see if it truly is the best, cheapest, greenest source of power available for Nova Scotians, yes or no?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't know exactly what the Leader of the Opposition's, Leader of the Conservative Party is getting at, but he knows full well that there is a comprehensive review process, that the project, before it can be approved as a capital expenditure for the utility, has to, in fact, go to the Utility and Review Board, and that is the appropriate process for a review.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, apparently the Premier feels it is somebody else's responsibility to decide whether this project is in the best interest of Nova Scotia or not. And that is a shame, because that is the job that the Premier was elected to determine. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, the Premier is fine with this project because someone else is going to end up paying the bills for it. And that someone else is the people of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, that will pay the bills for this project. And the Premier doesn't even know how much it's going to cost them. So my question to the Premier is this: how much do power rates have to rise before this Premier recognizes that his policies are making power unaffordable in Nova Scotia?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the reason why power rates are where they are today is because the Conservative government over many years refused to deal with the fact that we had a utility that was completely tied, chained really, to the fossil fuel market, to the international fossil fuel market. That's the problem we had. 10% raises year after year after year. 75% increase in fuel costs over 7 years, Mr. Speaker. That was a mistake they made that we don't intend to repeat.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Parents are concerned about their children's education, Mr. Speaker. Over the past 2 years, the NDP government has slashed funding and downloaded costs to school boards. As a result, Mr. Speaker, supports are being lost, teachers are being cut, and students are losing their educational assistance. We know that positions have been added to the senior administration of the Department of Education, Mr. Speaker, to be specific, on February 21st. A new position was created, that an associate deputy minister. My question to the Premier, why is the Premier increasing senior administration at department level while cutting funding to the classrooms and eliminating supports for students who need them?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as I pointed out to the Leader of the Opposition yesterday, the number of FTEs in the Department of Education is actually going down, Mr. Speaker. Just to correct the misinformation that the Leader of the Opposition was putting out, in fact, this year we will have the highest per student funding in our history and among the lowest, Mr. Speaker, student-teacher ratio in the province.
Honourable the Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the document that was presented in this House yesterday clearly shows that the senior administration at the level that the department is going up, Mr. Speaker. The cost of that is going up. While the Premier may be putting more money per student in public education, he's spending it in the wrong place, not in the classroom, but in the Department of Education. Mr. Speaker, as a result of this government's mismanagement of public education system, school boards are having to cut educational assistance and resources for students with special needs. Children with learning disabilities will have even less support, Mr. Speaker, now. These students aren't getting any extra support, but the Minister's office is. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier, why is the Premier so interested in providing support to the Minister instead of students who need it the most?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I think the member opposite confuses inter-offer transfers of secretaries, I think, the actual number of FTEs in the department. The number of FTEs in the department is going down. Mr. Speaker, we're doing this the same time there are some 30,000 less students in the system, 300 more teachers than there were 10 years ago, Mr. Speaker, and the Leader of the Opposition knows that, in fact, no teachers lost their jobs last year at all.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, what I know is, Mr. Speaker, that this government is cutting funding to classroom students, Mr. Speaker, at the same time they're raising administration costs in the Department of Education. Mr. Speaker, it's very clear, Mr. Speaker, if the Premier doesn't believe his Minister of Education can do the job, Mr. Speaker, without all this extra support, why does he believe classroom teachers can deliver public education to students with less funding, Mr. Speaker? Right. My question to the Premier, why is the government increasing senior administration at the department while at the same time we're asking parents with students of special needs to do more with less?
Yeah. Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, it's exactly the opposite. We are reducing the number of FTEs in the Department of Education, Mr. Speaker. We have protected funding for students with special needs, and we are the government that set up the comprehensive plan for students with autism, Mr. Speaker. That was this government.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Mr. Speaker, last session I repeatedly asked the Minister of Education about real student-to-teacher ratio numbers. The Minister struggled with a response and failed to provide the real numbers. The Minister has now had some time to reflect on that request. The Minister tabled a document, but it did not include real numbers, nor was it a true reflection of the realities of our classroom. School boards are announcing right now lost teaching positions due to the minister's cuts. So my question to the minister is this. Will the minister share with the members of this House and all Nova Scotians the true student-to-classroom teacher ratio?
Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm kind of confused about real numbers. I did provide real numbers. The numbers for ratio for teachers in the province is 12.9 teachers. It's 12.9 ratio, teacher to 12.9. Then, if we take out administrators out of that mix, because just to make sure everyone understands that 12.9 includes our music teachers and physical education supervisors and our administrators. Take the administrators out of that, it's 14.7 our ratio. Our class size ratio, our class size, average class size in the province in the elementary school is 21, and in junior or senior high, it's 24. Those are real numbers. I did table a document last session. I will definitely table that again, but the ratio, based on the same kind of ratio that every other government has ever used in this province, the ratio is 12.9:1. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'd be glad to clear up the minister's confusion. It appears she just doesn't get it. But Nova Scotians do get it, Mr. Speaker. In response to an article by the minister in the Kings County Register saying that this student-teacher ratio was 12.9:1, a letter to the editor stated otherwise, and I will table this. Quote, "This number may look good on paper. However, it is not the reality of the classrooms in the Annapolis Valley region or much of the province for that matter. A more realistic average ratio, if you investigate actual classrooms, is closer to 25:1. So my question to the minister is this. Will the minister once again acknowledge... Got it here. Will the minister acknowledge now that the student-teacher ratio of which she speaks is not a true reflection of what's happening in our Nova Scotia schools?
Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I will repeat. The ratio for teachers and for staff for the province is 12.9. That is a ratio. That is the same kind of ratio that has been used historically. And very clearly, that is a ratio. Class size, however, is different, which I just explained, which you take out your administrators. The ratio changes, but class sizes, the average class size in the province, range from 21 for the elementary and 24. I will find that information, which I will table again, but ratio is different than class size. Two different things completely. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to be specific about the article that I just tabled. In the Kings County schools, there are plenty of examples where the minister's ratio does not ring true. For example, from grade primary to 1, 27:1. In grades 5, 30:1. In grade 9 science, 36:1. In grade 9 music, 54:1. So, I'm sure that the minister would be welcome. The minister would be welcome in that Kings County school. Teachers and parents, Mr. Speaker, know the true number. And they're not getting them from the minister. They're getting them from the actual classrooms. So, final question. Again, will the minister acknowledge that a 12.9:1 ratio is not a true reflection of the realities of the numbers that exist in the classrooms in our province?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. The ratio is 12.9:1, and I will repeat a little lesson that I just gave the host. Ratio is different than class size, and I would say that across the province, you are going to find different groupings in class size, but based on averages, our class sizes are better than they have been in a generation.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Energy. Standard & Poor's Rating Services has revised its outlook for Emera and Nova Scotia Power from stable to negative, pointed directly to their massive capital spending plans, Mr. Speaker. Standard & Poor's protects Emera investors. Nova Scotians are wondering who is protecting them. How much per kilowatt hour does the Minister of Energy think Nova Scotia families can afford to pay for their electricity bill?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the Honourable Member for his question. Certainly, we're all concerned about the volatile fuel prices, about the ever-increasing costs of coal and oil, and we're doing something about that. We're trying to get off of fossil fuels and get on to more renewables, more conservation measures. You know, we're really undergoing an energy transformation in this province, and we're working in the long term to make power rates not only more affordable today, but to make it more affordable in the long term.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Emera President and CEO Chris Huskilson says he needs money to meet requirements of the NDP Bite the Bullet electricity plan. The NDP plan doesn't mention affordability, as too many Nova Scotians are fully aware of. When will the minister rewrite his government's Bite the Bullet electricity plan and put people, small businesses, and their ability to afford electricity back at the top of the decision-making pyramid? Here, here, here.
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We do have a plan. It's a renewable electricity plan that came forward in 2010. And we have an investment in our future through the ComFit program that involves communities, through the IPP program that involves companies in this province providing renewable energy. And overall, we have a strong plan to get off of fossil fuels. We can't continue to bury our head in the sand forever like previous governments have done. We have to move forward with a plan.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Standard & Poor's Rating Services analyst, responsible for the outlook changes for the power company, says upshot is Nova Scotia Power's ability to cover a growing debt load will depend on the size of rate increases. This is no upshot. Nova Scotians cannot afford to bail out this government's Bite the Bullet electricity plan any longer. How many people, my question to the minister, how many people and jobs will this government drive away from Nova Scotia before it's willing to get off its high horse and review its Bite the Bullet electricity plan?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I mentioned, the status quo is not an option any longer. We can no longer continue to rely on fossil fuels. We need renewable energy in this province, clean, green, renewable energy. And the estimated cost is somewhere between 1% and 2% a year over the next 5 years. And that's an investment in our future, an investment in lower power rates for Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Mr. Speaker, math and literacy scores for students are important. They help us to identify the level of success our students are having in our public schools. We recognize that we can always do better, and we always want to improve those scores. So my question to the Minister is this: what steps has the Minister taken to improve the math scores in this province?
The Honourable the Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. As part of our Kids and Learning plan that we launched about 2 months ago now, I think we have outlined that we are going to be moving to the Western Protocol. We recognize that our math curriculum has an awful lot of outcomes, and what we're going to be doing is moving to the Western Protocol. That work has already started. And I will continue on, I would imagine, with my second question. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, the Minister speaks about 2 months. I believe this government's been in almost 3 years, so I think that maybe waiting for 2 months prior to would suggest something should have been done. This... This government... I'll remember that, John. This government has done nothing constructive, nothing designed to improve those math scores. Rather, they have cut funding to public education, eliminated math mentors, and forced school boards to reduce the number of classroom teachers. So my question to the minister is this: how would those cuts be designed to improve math scores?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
We are investing in our, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We are investing in our students' education. Our per student funding is higher than it's ever been. And there's another piece here that I just would like to remind the member opposite that over a 10-year period, we have had 30,000 students leave our system. Today, as we're standing here talking, there are 361 more teachers in the system today. Obviously, something, there's a disconnect there, and the department is working very, very hard on making sure that our children are going to succeed. So our investments are strategic to make sure our students are successful. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was pleased that the minister mentioned the Western curriculum. Students in Nova Scotia are very young, bright people. Our classroom teachers are well-trained, dedicated, and hard-working individuals. The solution the minister has referred to, she's going to do it now, 2 months she's decided, to adopt a new curriculum, in particular, the Alberta curriculum. Yet parents in the Western Canada, part of Canada, in Alberta in particular.
Yeah, that's what it is. We don't have to do math. Government
Miller.
Order, order, please. The Honourable Member for Colchester North has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Parents in Western Canada themselves are concerned about this math instruction, about the outcomes, and about the curriculum, and they formed a group called WISE, W-I-S-E. And this well-educated group is recommending to their own government changes in the Alberta curriculum that this minister wants to bring to Nova Scotia. So my question would be, why would Nova Scotia adopt a curriculum from another province when the educators in that province are not happy with the curriculum they have?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We are working under with the Western Protocol, which has shown to have benefits for the students in certain parts of the province. The students that are exceeding in math have been following the Western Protocol. And this is something that has been adopted with consultation with our school boards that are looking forward to this curriculum being moved into our school system. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. As all Nova Scotians are now only too painfully aware, the Premier promised when he was running to be Premier that he would not raise their taxes. As we all so famously know now, shortly after the election, he did just that.
What happened? Apparently he didn't have to do it.
Now this week, Mr. Speaker, the Premier is at it again, making a new tax promise, but only if he is reelected. Apparently the Premier thinks he can fool Nova Scotians twice. Mr. Speaker, in 2007, the Premier's own Minister of Finance spoke of the importance of keeping your promises. He said, and I quote, "A new promise is a poor substitute for a broken one." And I will table that quote for the Minister of Finance and for his Premier.
Good quote. It's a good quote.
Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier, does he agree with his own Minister of Finance that a new promise is a poor substitute for a broken one?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the answer to the question is very easy. The leader of the Conservative Party should consider the increase in the HST the legacy of the Conservative government.
The Honourable, the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier has only been in office for under 3 years.
Yep.
And here is his legacy already. Every Nova Scotia family, $4,000 more paid in extra HST since he broke his promise. Every Nova Scotia family, $6,000 more deeper in debt because his government broke its promise. My question to the Premier, how can he look those families in the eye after reaching into their pockets for $4,000 more in a broken promise and tell them that he kept his commitment?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I do it by saying to them that I'm profoundly sorry that the Conservative government left us so far in debt.
The leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians know that that is not true. But what they also know... Mr. Speaker... The Auditor General himself, $19,700,000 surplus when those guys got in. $19,700,000 surplus. What have they done? The Premier broke his promise. He raised their taxes. They watch as meaningful services to Nova Scotians, like health care, like education, are cut, while more jobs are added at the Department of Education, at the Department of Health, at the Department of Finance, something the Premier also promised not to do. My question to the Premier, how can he look Nova Scotians in the eye and tell them that he kept his promise after raising their taxes and cutting their services and creating a deficit and more debt?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, four of the foremost economists in the Atlantic provinces pointed out that the former Conservative government left us with a $1.4 billion structural deficit, Mr. Speaker. The things that the leader of the Conservative Party says is true. It did cost people money. It did so because of the mistakes made by the former Conservative government.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government recently signed an MOU agreement with university that removes the cap on tuition in the province of Nova Scotia. With university costs skyrocketing and the cost of living going through the roof, I think students need more, Mr. Speaker. Will the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education stand in this House today and commit to reversing this government's deep cuts to post-secondary education and begin to start lowering tuition costs in this province?
No questions.
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm very proud that last year our government invested $42.5 million, the largest single contribution towards making university education affordable and accessible in this province. And we're continuing with our upcoming budget to make it more affordable for students. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the fact that this government acknowledges that the fact that this government is investing in all these affordability measures tells me one thing. Tuition isn't affordable in the province of Nova Scotia. Tuition isn't affordable. And instead of actually investing in the core funding of our post-secondary education system, Mr. Speaker, this government has cut $75 million out of our post-secondary education system. And the challenge here, Mr. Speaker, is that the majority of jobs that we're creating now require a post-secondary credential. So my question again to the minister, will she commit in this House today to reverse these deep cuts to our post-secondary education system and lower tuition in the province of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Our party has a long track record of trying to keep tuition affordable in this province. Certainly, we supported the former government in freezing tuitions, and we stand on our record of keeping tuition for undergraduate Nova Scotia students attending Nova Scotia universities at or below the national average. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I've heard this minister and this premier say they're keeping our tuition in the province below the national average. According to Stats Can, our tuition in the province is far above the national average, Mr. Speaker, and I'll table that. For undergrads, Mr. Speaker, for graduate students, it's even higher, and I'll table this as well. I think it's time that this government puts students before spin, Mr. Speaker.
That's right.
Mr. Speaker, cost of rent is going up, the cost of food is increasing, the cost of electricity and gas is increasing, and when it comes to tuition, this government is actually making education more expensive. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister, will she commit to reverse her government's deep cuts to our post-secondary education system and lower tuition costs in the province of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Our government is the first government in the history of this province to put a debt cap on students. We have a significant number, higher than many other jurisdictions, of Nova Scotians who are able to attend university. We're very proud of that. We're very proud to support 11 universities that make it an excellent opportunity right across this province. So both geographical and in terms of affordability, accessibility is something that we really hold dear, and we will be watching the situation very carefully. But certainly we understand that there is a need for post-secondary education, for I believe it's 75% of new jobs coming open in this province. We have a wonderful economic and educational and training opportunity here with all the new initiatives going on, and we're going to support that with well-educated graduates who can go into those good-paying jobs. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. This past week's been a dark one for the youth of Yarmouth, Digby, and Shelburne counties. The Minister of Community Services refused funding for SHIFT, a supportive housing option for youth. By forcing the facility to cut back their hours, the Minister has shown her absolute disregard for our homeless youth. She took away the only option that many had for safe and supportive place to sleep. In only 14 months, SHIFT has made a huge impression on the community. Students and adults all over the counties have gathered to rally against the department's decision. Yet the minister insists that, of course, she knows best. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Minister of Community Services. What amount of backlash from the community, how can the minister justify her decision? Does she not believe that homelessness in rural areas is as important as homelessness in Metro?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, myself as a minister and as a mother of a youth, and this government, it for the first time has developed a youth plan for support services across this province. The Honourable Member is talking about an organization that I personally sat down with, and that we talked to them about the approach they were taking was not only a band-aid approach, but also a non-sustainable approach. We did not cut 1 cent from them, because from day one, we have been open, we have been honest. We said we would not be supporting it financially. However, the board of directors came to us many times with a deficit running 20 to 30,000 every 2 to 3 months. And because we did not want to see the youth in a terrible position, we kept funding it. We made an agreement with them, and unfortunately, they reneged on the agreement. Thank you.
Honourable Member for Argyle on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Now the facility is no longer able to offer services 24/7. They've been forced to cut back to regular business hours Monday to Friday. The minister knows that homelessness continues after the workday ends. Since its opening, SHIFT has had 34 youth call their facility a home. The staff has helped reintegrate them back into their own homes and even help others find a place of their own. Without a permanent address, Mr. Speaker, these kids can't get jobs, apply to school, or take any of the necessary steps to get back on their feet. My question to the minister, what does the minister have to say to the six kids who up until last week were staying at the SHIFT facility? What does she say to those vulnerable youth who need her help tonight?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Well, in fact, Mr. Speaker, I visited SHIFT. I talked to the youth. I spoke to several of the youth last week. And you know what? It amazes me when I had a conversation with them how brilliant and intelligent they are, because they agreed with the fact that we were rolling out a new model that youth could access across the province. And the fact is that it was a supportive hub model. And you know what amazes me? Those youth are acting more adult than the adults that are fighting about what kind of service, when we had an agreement with the organization. And we, what's happening is it's being played out, and I'm not talking about all the people of Yarmouth. I am talking about the politicians here that are trying to make political points out of a situation with the youth. And it's very unfortunate that these adults, as politicians, want to get brownie points out of this rather than working together in a restorative manner, which the organization at SHIFT promised they would do. And they're battling it now out in the media rather than at the table where the youth sat and talked to me.
Thank you. Member for Argyle on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I can't really believe my ears right now, because we went to a meeting. I know the minister, the member for Yarmouth, and I were invited to a meeting, and there was 100 or so people that were there worried about what was going to happen to homelessness in Yarmouth. There was a rally where hundreds of students were able to express their disappointment with the government in front of town hall. These aren't just the politicians, as she's trying to say. These are actual individuals and concerned parents that are very concerned about what's happening at the SHIFT Society. So for her to say she doesn't necessarily have the information before her, and I ask that maybe she look into this just a little bit further and get the information to make sure that these youth don't end up on the street tonight, because, that, Mr. Speaker, that is exactly where they're going to end up. Mr. Speaker, I ask the minister, what is she going to do to make sure that those individuals no longer have to stay on the street or have to bed surf or have to couch surf or actually end up in dangerous situations where their lives may be at risk?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, the reason we have a plan and we have a strategy and we have partnerships. We have partnerships. We also have placements for each and every one of those youth that are there. But you know, it's so interesting, Mr. Speaker, how...
Order, order, please. Order, order. Well, you know, I think that things are becoming a little heated at this time, and I think I'll just take a little deep breath and we can continue debate in this chamber in a parliamentary way for all. Okay? The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, we have a plan in place. We have the youth that would be going presently to SHIFT. We have placements with them. We are caring about our youth. The Department of Community Services, that's what they do best, is to help children and youth. But as I mentioned, it is really incredible how this can turn into a political game, because I would like to table an article that quoted the Honourable Member, and it's from Argyle, and it's from the article was printed, Homeless in Yarmouth. Minister admits we have a problem. However, it says, Don Drummond said he's not certain
order,
that
order,
such
please,
a place...
Order, please, order. You cannot use a member's name in this chamber. You refer by the Honourable Member...
What I will say is that I'm reading a quote,
The Honourable Member for Community Services have the floor.
I will say the Honourable Member then, because I'm reading a quote.
Thank you.
So I
apologize
that, but I will insert Honourable Member. It says, the Honourable Member said he's not certain that such a place, referencing shift, is what the community needs. I will table that.
Order, order, please. Order, please. Order, please. Order, please. I will ask the Honourable Member to come to order now, or I will remove you from the chair out of the hall for the remainder of the day. Thank you. Referring to a member by name is improper to refer by any member by their name in any way during any proceedings in the House, included notice of motions while reading from documents such as newspaper stories. Understood? Thank you. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday's budget was yet another disappointment when it comes to addressing the challenges Nova Scotians experience from their health care system. DHAs, who are responsible for delivering frontline patient care, have been faced with their second consecutive year of budget pressures from this NDP government and yet somehow are expected to do more with less. Given that the NDP was critical of health care wait times, Mr. Speaker, when they were running for election in 2009, could the Premier please explain why his government has delivered yet another budget that does the precious little to address Nova Scotia's number one health care priority, wait times?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the member opposite knows, as the Leader of the Opposition knows, we have now moved the administrative costs in health care from being among the highest in the country to below the national average. We've been able to take those costs out of the system. And Mr. Speaker, we have participated with the DHAs in merger agreements to ensure that the most cost-effective way of using the money in those district health authorities is used. So when we make those savings, we'll roll them into patient care, and that's why we're having success in improving our wait times, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, what I know is he's closing emergency rooms across Nova Scotia, and he's investing in senior administration staff for the Minister of Health Care, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the average wait time for a diagnostic mammogram at the QE2 is now 97 days. In 2008, the same wait time was 70 days, Mr. Speaker. The wait for life-saving radiation therapy treatment for cancer patients in Capital District, Mr. Speaker, was 36 days. Mr. Speaker, is 36 days. In May 2008, the wait time, Mr. Speaker, in Capital District was 14 days. Our wait times are going in the wrong direction, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Premier, can the Premier explain how wait times for these procedures are going to improve?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, I'd just like to correct what the member of the Leader of the Opposition said. In fact, Mr. Speaker, what is happening is that we are keeping emergency rooms open right across the province 24-7, Mr. Speaker. That is what Better Care is achieving. It's achieving them through the collaborative emergency centres, Mr. Speaker, a success that is going to be copied in other provinces, Mr. Speaker. But I would ask the Minister of Health to address the specific questions with respect to wait times.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want all members to know that this government has made two very significant investments in the millions of dollars, both at the Cape Breton District Health Authority and at the Capital District Health Authority, to expand radiation therapy. Construction is underway to accommodate bunkers for new equipment that is required to ensure that we meet the radiation standards, radiation treatment standards for cancer care across Nova Scotia. It is a significant investment, Mr. Speaker. The patients and staff in those programs are very pleased for that investment, Mr. Speaker, and it will keep our wait times within the benchmarks that have been established nationally.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, a good step to stay within those benchmarks would prevent the wait times from growing, Mr. Speaker. We're going in the wrong direction, Mr. Speaker. Yes. Mr. Speaker, ironically, the Premier talks about emergency rooms. I can tell you there are many communities across this province that understand and know that this government has closing emergency rooms. He speaks of the community emergency centres, Mr. Speaker. That's a new wait time for this government, Mr. Speaker. They've announced 5 and 3 communities that are still waiting, Mr. Speaker, for the opening of those centres, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier is, the NDP government campaigned to reducing health care wait times, Mr. Speaker, yet yesterday, Mr. Speaker, when the budget was introduced, wait time projects line in the budget had zero beside it. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier please tell Nova Scotians how wait times will be addressed, given that the elimination of this budget line item would be indicated it's not a priority for his government?
Yeah. Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for the opportunity to address this question. As I pointed out, we said we were going to deal with emergency rooms. We're doing that. It's being done in a crystal clear fashion, a plan to address them right across the province. With respect to wait times, Mr. Speaker, that's an easy one for me to answer. It's being done through the good management of the Department of Health.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, nearly 6 months ago, actually before we even started the fall session of the legislature, the Minister of Health told the DHAs to cut 3% from their budgets. According to the media release, the Minister wanted more time for planning to allow for the best possible decisions. The reality, however, is that DHAs will be making cuts in order to adhere to the edict from this NDP government. Given the increased planning time provided, why will members of the House be debating budget cuts without the benefits of the details contained in DHA business plans? My question is for the Minister.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as members of this House know, it is under this government that my department has brought in the approval of business plans in the DHAs much earlier than has ever occurred in the past. In fact, at the beginning of the fiscal year. And Mr. Speaker, we will be doing that again this year. We've worked very closely with the DHAs, and I want to take an opportunity here publicly to thank the DHAs for the hard work that they have done. It is a challenge in our province with an aging population, a population that suffers from high rates of chronic disease, to control our health care costs. And we are probably the province in the country that is leading the way with respect to having done so, Mr. Speaker. And it has been done through the very hard work and dedication of the men and women who work in the DHAs across our province, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, Southwest Health has seen a budget decrease of close to $1 million over last year's estimate. Pictou DHA is facing a $1.4 million cut, and Gasher will be asked to cut $1.3 million from their 2011-12 forecasted expenditure. Mr. Speaker, these are the examples on paper. All DHAs have been asked to do much more with less, and yet we are not able to scrutinize the details. Given the Minister stated in a news release on October 14th, and I'll table that document, that a plan for approval would be submitted before the spring budget, will the Minister confirm that she and or her department are aware of DHA budget cut details as a result of approving the business plans?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm working through the final details of the District Health Authority plans before I bring them to Executive Council which is part of the process for budgetary approval, Mr. Speaker. And as soon as that process is complete, of course, we will be releasing those plans. But, Mr. Speaker, again, I want to say that it's a challenge to contain, control costs. We are working very hard. We've reduced administration in our district health authorities. We have now a merge service initiative underway, which will see a further reduction in administration. We have gone through a process where we have protected patient care at the bedside, Mr. Speaker, and we have been able in this budget to reinvest savings into strategic areas of priority for our healthcare system. And I'm looking forward to having an opportunity to have fuller discussions with members of this chamber during the budget estimates in terms of what the details of our investment will be in our healthcare system, Mr.
Speaker. The Honourable Member for King's West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And that was a very, very long no to my question. Mr. Speaker, 6 months of planning, 3% cuts for the second year in a row, and no details. Last year in the Annapolis Valley, the Berwick Clinic slashed its hours to save money in a budget freeze. $0 saved. That impacts patient care and puts pressure on the regional hospital ER. Other DHAs implemented or increased user fees to deal with health issues at a time when life is less and less affordable for Nova Scotians. My question to the minister, will the minister please indicate whether she will formally approve and release the DHA business plans before the end of this House session, or has she now conveniently slowed down the process?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my experience with that member is that that member hasn't been all that capable of handling the details, Mr. Speaker. He seems to get them wrong quite often, Mr. Speaker. And but he will have an opportunity to have those details, Mr. Speaker, as we work through the final iterations of the DHA budgets.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question today is for the Minister of Community Services. Mr. Speaker, the community of Dartmouth North is made up predominantly of 60% multi-unit dwellings, and in recent conversations with private landlords, our discussion centred around increases in power rates, increases upcoming in water rates, thus resulting in increases in rental costs. Mr. Speaker, one of the conversations also centered around the fact that a number of landlords are more apt to not want to rent to individuals who reside or are on income assistance because they simply don't have enough funding. So my question to the minister is, why does her NDP government not agree to increase shelter allowances?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member for the question. I have referenced this in the past, and the fact is I know it's quite difficult in understanding the shelter rates, but history has shown, unfortunately, when those shelter rates go up, that the rent tends to automatically go up because the landlords know that there's an increase. So what we've been doing within our department is offering many different programs that people could access, which would increase their income level. And we've done a very good job of that over the last several years in government. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth North on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, poverty reduction tax credits, affordable tax credits, are only good if you can wait every 4 months for funding. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians are hungry now. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians have to pay power bills now, and every month they have to pay rent. And Mr. Speaker, interestingly enough, you don't qualify for those tax credits if you're actually homeless. Does the minister recognize that her government's unwillingness to make appropriate adjustments to the shelter allowances is actually putting more Nova Scotians at risk of being homeless?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, as I just mentioned, we have offered multiple type programs that people can access. Now, for example, if you took a single parent with two children, because of the increases in the affordable tax in, credit, the poverty tax reduction credit, the increase in child benefits that we have continually have risen, and also the increase on the monthly amount for income assistance, which is $9 this time. It was $15 last year, way more than previous governments. They were doing them at $3 or $4 a year, so that's substantially a lot more. But take, for example, that single parent. They would have now, after 3 years, $2,300 annually more in their pockets under this government than they did the previous government. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the real issue is that we're seeing more youth that are at risk of being homeless or who are actually homeless. We're seeing more individuals, men and women, who are struggling, and at the shelter allowances now, they simply cannot pay their rent. Mr. Speaker, the majority of these Nova Scotians who rely on the minister's funding have to pay upwards of 60% for their shelter out of their income. That is unacceptable. This does not make sense when we're asking many of these individuals to deal with their addiction issues and mental health issues and overall well-being and health. If we don't deal with these issues now and the issue of shelter allowance, these individuals will find themselves relying on another system, one with a much greater cost, Mr. Speaker, and that's unfortunate for Nova Scotian taxpayers and those individuals. So my question to the Minister is, when will we see a real housing strategy come out? With the announcement last year of the federal funding, and will that housing strategy include an increase in the shelter allowances?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The housing component is very important to us. We've talked about that a lot, and that we have invested millions and millions with the assistance of the stimulus package into housing. We just went through 3 years of upgrading and building new housing. And once again, I said about the multiple programs that we are offering. I think another good example is you could take a and this is for what we often term as working poor. You can take a two-parent family with two children right now, and there's never been anything to help individuals that would have been termed the working poor, because we know that there is a distinction between people on income assistance and those people who are working for like $10 an hour. This government has put in a three-year period $4,400 more in their pocket each and every year. So we're working very hard to be able to provide the financial supports that all Nova Scotians need. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, it is my hope this time that the Minister of Health will answer the question and not get personal. Nova Scotians expect better from their minister. Mr. Speaker, yesterday we heard the Minister of Health and Wellness attempt to defend the indefensible when it comes to child and youth mental health services. Mr. Speaker, I would like to table a letter the NDP sent to the Mental Health Coalition during the 2009 election. Contained in the letter is the following statement. The Conservatives decided if you can't fix a problem, then you can pretend it doesn't exist. In 2005, Capitol Health ordered a change in how wait times would be measured. They scheduled appointments far in advance and removed people from the wait list while they were still waiting. The number of people waiting appeared to go down when it was actually rising. I tabled the document. Sound familiar, Mr. Speaker? No different than the wait list management system the minister is now defending as a best practice at the IWK. My question to the minister: if it wasn't good enough for the NDP during the 2009 election, why is it acceptable today?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, mental health services are something we all want to see improved, I think, in this legislature. And what the IWK has decided to do is to fix a system that was broken, a system where a very small number of people got access to services, but only if their situation became urgent, where everybody else sat on waiting lists and got no services. So they're adopting a new model, Mr. Speaker, and the change to the new model was doing an assessment of those who were on this very long waiting list to determine who still was indeed waiting for services and bringing that wait list up to date. And Mr. Speaker, as a result of the work they've done, more than 600 families have had an intake assessment, Mr. Speaker, which would not have occurred without the work that the IWK has done. So, Mr. Speaker, it's the right thing to do. It is not something that should be ridiculed, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for King's West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, if this minister was in opposition, she would be shouting from the rooftops about the injustice being done to child and adolescent mental health in this province. Mr. Speaker, the attachment to the letter sent to the Mental Health Coalition in 2009 goes on to state that the NDP, if forming government, will work to expand both day treatment and inpatient services for adolescents. The IWK decision to move to a 24/5 model will result in 5,000 less inpatient days for children and youth. My question to the minister, will she now admit that pressures on budgets are forcing DHAs like the IWK to do the exact opposite of what the NDP promised they would do in the last election?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, I've been very clear about what it is that we are supporting in terms of the IWK model. The IWK, and I circulated yesterday all of the various programs that they offer for mental health and addictions, are adopting more day treatment programs for children and adolescents who have behavioral problems, Mr. Speaker. And this is supported by the clinical research and evidence that it is the best practice, it is the best way to work with this particular population. With respect to inpatient treatment, Mr. Speaker, inpatient treatment will continue at the IWK for those children and adolescents and their families who have acute and chronic psychiatric disorders, and there is no change in those treatment programs, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for King's West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my, how the mighty have fallen. Unfortunately, children and youth mental health services in this province are the victim of the fall. Faster assessments are great if treatment is readily available to follow. Otherwise, children and youth suffering from mental health issues continue to wait and suffer. My question to the minister, given in 2009 you committed to more inpatient services, why are you allowing the layoff of 22 frontline health workers?
Order, order, please. I will remind all members, using the word you, in a question is out of order. I explained that we're going to follow proper parliamentary procedure earlier in the House, and I'll look forward to that going forward. The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I think the Honourable Member has proved my earlier point. He doesn't allow the facts to get in the way of a good story, you know, Mr. Speaker. But the truth of the matter, Mr. Speaker...
The Honourable Minister of Health has the floor.
Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
The truth of the matter, the facts, Mr. Speaker, are that we are organizing care for families, kids and adolescents around the needs of families and those young people. We are not organizing services around the needs of healthcare workers and providers, Mr. Speaker. That is what is occurring here. This is the model that we are adopting, and more kids and more families will receive the care they need in an earlier time frame, Mr. Speaker. It is the better care sooner that we committed to, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This NDP government has done little to protect rural communities in our province. All regions outside Nova Scotia have experienced population decline since 2009. The provincial government has a responsibility to identify and address the specific problems that Nova Scotians face every day, Mr. Speaker, and no job as a government is more important than this. 3 years in, we have seen no sign of a clear and well-defined plan. So my question, will the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism explain to the people living in rural Nova Scotia why he has not provided a plan to keep them living and working in their communities?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, after 20 years of the lowest economic growth in the province of Nova Scotia, when we came into government, Mr. Speaker, we recognized this, Mr. Speaker. We developed a plan. We developed the plan for all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. It's called Jobs Here, which really addresses a large part of the issues that have confronted rural Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, after the Jobs Here plan has been rolled out now for over a year, the proof is certainly in the pudding, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Since 2009, the Annapolis Valley has seen their labour force shrink by 8.6%. This is on top of overall population decline in that area. People in that region are finding it harder and harder to get work in their communities, and after a certain point, they simply leave. My question to the Minister. Has the Minister expect to reverse rural out-migration without a plan that will tell Nova Scotians what he plans to achieve and, more importantly, how he plans to achieve it?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we do have a plan. I've stood here in my place many times during the last session. It is called Jobs Here, Mr. Speaker, and we are proud of the Jobs Here activity. Mr. Speaker, we've created, under the Jobs Here initiative, we created over 200... We saved over 2,000 jobs in the province of Nova Scotia, just in the forestry industry alone, Mr. Speaker. Is that member suggesting that we shouldn't invest it in those jobs, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, with the exception of Halifax, people are moving out of all regions of this province. It's simple to understand. No plan, no jobs. No jobs, people move elsewhere for work. If we look to southwest Nova Scotia, we see an example of another disturbing trend, and one that further explains why this minister needs to get a plan in place now. Since 2009, full-time employment has decreased by 6.7%, while part-time jobs are up 22%. So my question to the minister, how many part-time jobs with little or no benefits? How many part-time jobs does a person in rural Nova Scotia have in order to make ends meet and pay the bills?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my first comment, and I will table this, is this chart will show to you, will indicate the employment increase. We have more people employed in Nova Scotia now than any time in its history. Mr. Speaker, We've done investments in rural Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, is that member over there saying that we should invest and build it in Cape Breton, Mr. Speaker? Mr. Speaker, is that person saying that we shouldn't invest in Terios and Sun and shipbuilding down the southwest region, Mr. Speaker? Mr. Speaker, is that member over there saying we shouldn't invest it in the Shelburne shipyard, Mr. Speaker? Mr. Speaker, is that person over there saying that we shouldn't invest it in Goldwater, Mr. Speaker? We've made investments, Mr. Speaker, and we will continue.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, the Minister of Education told the House she was looking forward to April 20th, the day she will receive the priorities of school boards. She said that's when decisions will be made. Well, Mr. Speaker, it seems to me that decisions have already been made, and the Minister made the decision without any opinions of the Halifax Regional School Board. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister explain today why she did an end run around the Halifax Regional School Board, and why did she announce a capital project based on political needs rather than the requirements of the school board?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. It gives me great pleasure to say that we are following the plan of Kids and Learning First, and we are investing in our students. We are making sure that they have opportunities. So, therefore, there will be a Skills Trade Centre in Cole Harbour. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, there's nothing about Kids and Learning First in this. It's votes and pork barrel first. Mr. Speaker, it's funny the way the minister treats school boards. When something unpleasant has to be done, like millions of dollars in educational cuts, she leaves it up to the school boards to do the work. But when it comes to making pork barrel political school announcements, she doesn't even give them the courtesy of hearing what the priorities are.
I never forget.
My question to the Minister of Education is, will the minister guarantee the projects are truly priorities for the Halifax Regional School Board won't be cancelled or delayed because she chose to pick a project from the NDP's re-election priority list? Will she guarantee that projects in Sheet Harbour and Hounds County and elsewhere won't fall victim to her political agenda?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. April 20th, the priorities of the school boards will be coming into the department, and we will look at those priorities, and we will make our decisions based on what our school boards are telling us they need in each of the jurisdictions. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, if the announcements are coming, or the priorities are coming out in April the 20th, how come the announcement was made before that? One of the reasons the Premier actually, with a straight face, for building the new high school is to house some students when renovations to another school are being done. Mr. Speaker, that's laughable. I know you don't build a new house when you need to remodel a kitchen. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister, will the Minister admit today that her boss, the Premier, overreached when he gave the flimsy excuse of building a new school? Will she admit that her decision to build a school was for votes and pork barreling first?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The Cole Harbour area was actually identified many, many years ago when Howard Windsor was the superintendent. And I know that there's been a call for either skilled trades or a flexible school in Cole Harbour. This has been something that's been a priority for many, many people. The issue of providing Cole Harbour with skills trade. And following along with my comments on Kids and Learning First, this is providing the opportunity of students in all the surrounding areas to be able to get skills trade development right in their own community. I stand behind this decision. This is a good decision for Nova Scotians. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Speaker, at a housing and homelessness conference held in Halifax last November, the Minister of Community Services announced that her department was developing a homelessness and housing strategy. Since that time, we've heard nothing outside of that conference. No one has seen anything about this strategy. homelessness and housing advocates in Nova Scotia all agree that we're in a housing crisis, Mr. Speaker. 1,700 families are waiting to get into public housing, and they would also agree we're in a crisis. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister, when can the people of Nova Scotia expect to see this alleged housing strategy?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, the whole issue of housing and homelessness is very dear to us as a government, and we have put many initiatives in place over the last 3 years to address that. And the fact is what they don't understand on the other side is that it takes time to strategize and build a very strong foundation to go forward with any initiative, because they don't know what the word plan means, they don't know what the word strategy means. Everything in the past has been on an ad hoc basis, and so that is why we take our time, so when we have the opportunity and we go forward with our plan, it's a solid plan.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, under this government, families are finding it harder to make ends meet. Homes are more expensive. Rent is going up. Power bills are unmanageable. It's become more and more difficult for families to keep a roof over their heads. Mr. Speaker, housing organizations are working with the private sector to increase access to affordable housing. But people are looking to this government to come to the table and make a meaningful commitment. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of Community Services commit today to work with community housing and homelessness organizations to increase access to affordable housing in this province?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I don't have to make a commitment because we've been doing that all along.
Yes. The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, 1,700 families would beg to differ. And that number does not even include the many families who are renting, but they don't know where their next rent check is going to come from, those that are couch surfing and not sure when they're going to be tossed out on the street, and those who are worried about losing their family homes because they simply cannot make ends meet under this NDP government. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister tell members of this House today what she is going to do to get these 700 families into homes?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, we have been doing a lot. And what we've been doing is investing in affordable housing. We have been developing strategies. We have been meeting with the shelters. We have created new shelter programs with hub supports that have never been in this province before. And as I said earlier, you take a family of two parents with two children. Because of this NDP government, they have $4,400 more dollars. That's an increase of 23% more in their income. And they would never even touch something like that or even consider it. And that's from all the good work that this government is doing.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on a new question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the gap between what men earn and women earn is increasing here in Nova Scotia. It's decreasing across Canada. Women and families are finding it harder to make ends meet. My question, did the minister responsible for the status of women raise any concerns with her cabinet colleagues about this increasing wage gap and how this government is making life more difficult for women and families to make ends meet?
The Honourable Minister of Status of Women, the Honourable Minister of Advanced Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly for generations we've known that there has been a wage gap between men and women. And despite claims to the contrary, actually in Nova Scotia, the wage gap is shrinking. And certainly when we look at the statistics available through Stats Canada, between 2008 and 2010, the median hourly wage for women increased by $2, whereas the median wage for men increased by $1.15. Now, that's not to deny that a lot of our service domestic and the lower paying administrative and service jobs predominantly are staffed by women. And that's one reason that our government is upskilling, providing all kinds of training opportunities so that more and more women can move into the higher paying full-time jobs in this province.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. But just so the Minister is aware, her government was not in 08. And if you look at the Stats Can figures for 09 on, in fact, the wage gap is increasing. Mr. Speaker, this government has slashed health budgets. Women make up over 80% of the health workforce. These cuts affect women's employment, and women will have to take on more caregiving responsibilities as this government puts off doing anything to reduce wait times. Mr. Speaker, I'll ask my question again. Did the minister raise any concerns with her cabinet colleagues about the impacts these health cuts are having on women and their families?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
I think we've always recognized that policy, budget, and legislative decisions impact differently on women than they do men. And that's one reason that our government has strengthened the gender-based analysis on all policy changes and recommended strategies in this province. And so we take very seriously We look very seriously at that lens and do that analysis. We have invested heavily in programs that support women going into non-traditional fields that often have higher paying wages. And certainly this is a complex issue, and we are looking at a breadth of different solutions in order to increase women's prosperity in this province. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Over the past 2 years, this NDP government has slashed public education funding by $65 million. Women make up nearly 70% of the education workforce. Women's employment is being affected by these cuts. When schools are looking for more volunteers to deliver the services, it's women who are going to end up filling that service gap. And above all, women are concerned that their children's education is suffering under this NDP government. Mr. Speaker, my question for the third time, did the Minister for the Status of Women raise any concerns to her cabinet colleagues about the impact cuts to education have on women and their families?
The Honourable Minister for the Responsible for the Status of Women.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I've mentioned earlier this year, we have strengthened both the membership of the Advisory Council on the Status of Women. They are giving good advice on impacts on policy and other government decisions. Certainly, the breadth of factors that are taken into account when any decision is made by this government is as thorough and carefully analyzed as possible, and we are taking steps to alleviate any, to mitigate any negative impacts. We have increased the breadth of upskilling of training and education programs for women and girls in this province, and we are very encouraged with the uptake. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Preston.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the NDP has waited until November 2011 to inform Nova Scotians about how to apply for the Heating Assistance Rebate Program. Mr. Speaker, the information on how to apply should start earlier so recipients have ample time to apply for this badly needed rebate. My question to the Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations is, why did the minister wait until November before starting the information campaign for the Heating Assistance Rebate Program?
Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Yeah, I think the member
is probably starting off where he left off last fall when he raised this question and got an answer then. The way the program works is that anybody who has actually ever used the program, that application forms go out to them automatically. All the MLAs actually get applications that go to our offices, and every community organization practically in the province gets notification of those as well. And Mr. Speaker, we also put out a press release last fall on this, and it did not get picked up. Did not get picked up by the media. So we do what we can, and certainly the people can't really apply till January 1st. And we made it quite clear, certainly after that date, that the program was in place. And I have to say, we don't hear much as far as negative comment on the advertising on this program, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Preston on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, government needs to let the public know about the program so they can apply for relief from this high energy cost under this NDP government. In the past, the budget has been underspent because the NDP did not ensure that Nova Scotians knew about the program in a timely manner. My question to the Minister is, was the budget for the Energy Assistance Rebate Program underspent this year again as well?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
I can try to confirm that. It's my understanding that it was, but I can verify that for the member.
The Honourable Member for Preston on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Liberal caucus has questioned the Minister repeatedly to make sure that Nova Scotians knew about this program. And the people of Nova Scotia need to know much earlier, allowing them the time to access this really important rebate. My question to the Minister is again, why did it take a sustained attack from the official opposition to force the NDP to inform the public?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
I think the Honourable Member better do more advertising on his sustained attack, because I didn't know they had one.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Mr. Speaker, Propeller Brewing Company is a local Nova Scotia success story. In allnovascotia.com today, we learned that its workers are waiting to find out if they will become unionized. Mr. Speaker, for the last 6 or 7 years...
Order, please. The time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has run out. I will now recognize the Honourable Member for Kings West on an introduction.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I'd like to draw the attention of the House at the West Gallery, where Kelly Murphy, an IWK mental health worker and NSGEU board member, is present today for the proceedings. If we could give her a warm welcome.
I will now call on the House Leader for the Official Opposition to call opposition members' business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Would you please call Bill Number 3, the Sales Tax Act?
And Bill Number 3, the Sales Tax Act. The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis.